Susanna Scheffer, Project Director at Murder Victims Families for Human Rights, will be speaking tonight at SUNY Albany School of Criminal Justice about her new book, Fighting for Their Lives, Inside the Experience of Capital Defense Attorneys. The book tackles such questions as how do attorneys who represent clients facing the death penalty cope with the stress and trauma of their work? Through conversations with 20 of the most experienced, dedicated post-conviction capital defenders in the United States, we certainly get a sense of what that is like. Other questions: what is it like for these capital defenders in their last visits or phone calls with clients who are about to be taken to the execution chamber, or the next mornings in their lives with their families and their dreams and flashbacks and moments alone in the car? Today's event is at 5:30 at Husted Hall Amphitheater, and Susanna Scheffer, again, is the author of Fighting for Their Lives, Inside the Experience of Capital Defense Attorneys, and it's a great pleasure to welcome you to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What brought you to think about the life of a capital defense attorney and what they go through?
Well, at Murder Victims Families for Human Rights, I work with families of murder victims and families of people who have been executed. So I have been immersed in learning about how those two groups are affected by the death penalty. And it was a natural outgrowth of that to become curious about the impact of the death penalty on the attorneys. These are the folks whose job it is to prevent the execution. And what it mostly doesn't work. Attorneys who come in at the end stage are trying to prevent an execution, and they usually are not able to prevent it. So what is that like, to have that responsibility and to have it not work so often?
Let us talk about, when it comes to execution of the, I mean, obviously very rare in New York, but so what are the numbers that we're looking at of people that deal with this on a regular basis?
Not enough is the real answer. You know, one way to talk about numbers is that there are hundreds of people on death row without any lawyer. It's important to have that awareness that if you're on death row, you're not constitutionally guaranteed legal representation. So the people I talk to, the people that step in and do this at this end stage, are stepping into a situation of extreme urgency and desperation, where people are already sentenced to death. Not talking about the trial stage, but they're already sentenced to death and the execution date might be looming, and the lawyer who steps in at that point is stepping in to try to stop that. And they might have many cases at once. The attorneys I interviewed had lost, we could talk about losses, had lost sometimes 5 or 10 or 20 clients to execution over their careers.
And that is really, I mean, obviously one is traumatic,
right.
but put that number, a times table to that number,
yeah.
and it's really startling. So, but how many executions do we look at in roughly in this country in a year?
You know, it depends on where you are. I mean,
yeah.
You know, in a
but state, countrywide,
you know, it could be a couple hundred. It depends on you know, the given year and how you're counting it, how you're looking at it. I think it's also important when you're thinking of the attorney's experience to think of how close they often come. You know, you could have a execution that gets stayed at the very last minute, so that they're down to the wire. They might be, you know, a client might be preparing for death, and then the attorney has managed to stop it for a time. And I'm just adding that in just to give a sense of the texture,
right.
You can, you know, be so close and then have to go through it all over again.
I mean, one of the things that comes out in the book is that feeling that you literally have this person's life in your hands,
exactly.
which you do to mm-hmm. a certain extent. I mean, obviously there are the circumstances that warranted it to get to that point, mm-hmm. but you are their last resort.
Right. It's a funny thing because you are the one responsible. You know, when I went into this talking to the attorneys, I thought that they might feel a greater sense of power and control over the whole thing than others who might, you know, protest a given execution but not really be able to do anything about it. I thought, well, the attorneys are the ones that can get in there and file stuff. You know, if it's going to get stopped, they're the ones that will make it stop. And that's true. It's a great deal of responsibility. But they also feel very helpless because they so often don't feel really able to stop it. You know, so many of them use the image of, they said, it's like, this work is like seeing someone tied to the tracks as a train is approaching, and you're frantically trying to stop it.
How much of it is the law, and how much of it is the personal that seeps into the relationship between the lawyer and the accused.
How much of the work is that? Yes.
Well, I mean, even the emotional attachment and baggage that comes with it.
Right. That's the thing, exactly. Capital defense is about so much more than the law. You know, it is about the law. It's really challenging legal work to do, but it's an extremely raw human thing to do. You are having to learn about a client's life, learn how he got to where he is, as one of them put it, and then you are often getting to know the client very well, as you suggest, and then suffering from that loss. Exactly.
So when they go into it, is it strictly a legal approach in the sense of, okay, we have to look at this just, I can't get as involved in this person's life as I can about what is legal here, what is right, what is wrong, what is done, what isn't done, and go that route?
You know, it's actually both, because when you're coming in at that late stage, you are legally looking back to see if there were anything that was not done constitutionally that should have been done at the early
right.
stage. But the way you do that often, or one key way you do it, is to learn as much about the client's life as you can to see if there's something that was overlooked, something that would have allowed the jury initially to give a life sentence had that been introduced. So you're learning. You're talking to people who knew your client as a child. You're talking to teachers. You're talking to family members. You're learning a great deal about what went on in that person's life.
So there's not a natural detachment then that comes in of going, and I guess I look at someone who has done this 5, 6, 7 times of walking in and saying, okay, well, I can't get involved in this emotionally.
Right. Yeah, I think it's really hard because it is the emotional involvement that takes the toll. But many of them said to me, this is how I have to do it. I can't do it without caring. I can't do it without getting attached and without giving my all. So I think you've put your finger on a real kind of dilemma or conundrum of the work.
What perspective does this give you as the director at Murder Victims Families for Human Rights of what they're going through, of what the families are going through, and what the accused is going through?
I think everybody suffers. Everyone is affected, you know, and sometimes there's a temptation when we look at suffering to think that we have to kind of figure out who's suffering more or the most. And my interest is in looking at kind of how everybody is harmed by this practice. And it turned, you know, the organization I work with is families of murder victims and families of people who've been executed, both together in the organization. We see the suffering and the harm to each. And then when I chose to add in my own work, a look at the defense attorneys, I find that they're suffering there too and harm there as well. So many are affected by this practice, many more than just the person we're executing.
So what is the answer? I mean, is it avoidable in the sense of are you looking at the capital punishment as a whole and saying that maybe we have to rethink this as an option?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of possible answers. I mean, indeed, I am looking at that. I also think that that while we have it, we should be looking at the impact. You know, if this is something we're going to do as a society, let's pay attention to who it's affecting. And what should we do about that? What should we do for anybody in any helping profession who for whom that work takes a toll? So, yeah, you know, I think it's hard. Capital defenders feel that it's hard to generate sympathy for any toll that the work may be taking on them. Because there's a sense that, well, you know, there isn't much public sympathy for the work that they do. Whereas we might be more interested in the toll that is experienced by, you know, an EMT or a doctor or someone like that. But I'm interested in general in helping professions and the toll that work takes on anybody.
What difference do we see in states that either have a death penalty law that do not enforce it, do not use it, and have not sentenced anyone, or even if they're sentenced to death, they have not actually killed anyone, executed anyone, and also the states that have not do not have death penalty laws. What differences do we see?
Well, certainly in the lawyers, it's going to be very different. You know, I wanted to interview lawyers who had lost at least one client to execution because I was interested in the toll that takes.
Right.
And of course, to do that, I had to look at states where executions are common. So yeah, a state that's not executing a great deal is just not having that particular urgency.
So, but I mean, life without parole in a chance of a crime that the person perhaps did not commit, or is a young person who has now given their life to the prison system for 80 or whatever years. I mean, I'm not taking away. I'm just asking. It would seem that would have an effect as well.
Mm. Yeah, everything does have an effect. Yeah. And, you know, certainly some of the attorneys I spoke to said, look, what we're talking about here, if we were to win, so to speak, what winning means for us is overturning a death sentence and getting life without parole. You know, and one attorney said to me, you know, let's face it, what attorney really thinks that's a win? We take it as a win. So indeed, it's problematic too, but it is qualitatively different. You know, life is qualitatively different from death.
And what difference does it make to the families in the sense of is that death of that person who committed that crime important for closure as opposed to life without parole or, you know, even worse, you know, having no closure and no one ever paying the price for that crime?
Right. Families of murder victims feel a whole range of ways about the death penalty, and that's the really important thing to know. The organization I work with is an organization of families of murder victims who oppose the death penalty. What they really oppose is the notion of closure, the idea that they feel that's sort of a simplistic, false promise that's been held out. If you really listen to murder victims' family members and what is that experience like, you find that they don't talk about closure. They might talk about healing. They might talk about finding some meaning, but they don't talk about closure.
Because it never ends,
yeah,
right?
I mean,
there
no
is no such thing.
Yeah. You know, you say that's not the way to think about it. That's not our experience. That's something the media has put on us or, you know. So whether a victim's family member is in favor of the death penalty or not, I'm interested in greater understanding of the real depth of that experience and how we can really help victims.
And as you say, there's an range of opinion on that because I would assume there's many people who favor the death penalty who want an eye for an eye.
There are many people who favor the death penalty, and that tends to get more attention because it turns out there are also many who are not in favor of it or come to oppose it. And as I mentioned, our organization also includes families of people who've been executed who get very little attention and who are very much affected by the death penalty.
What is their experience? I mean, it's different for every person,
yeah.
I assume.
It's really hard thing to explain to a child that the state is killing your father, just for example. You know, kids will say things like, if it's wrong to kill, why is it right for the state to kill daddy? And that's a hard one to answer. The studies that we've been able to do of family members of people who've been executed show a traumatic impact, not unlike survivors of homicide in that sense. You know, a family member has been killed.
And there's no closure for them.
Right. And they're often stigmatized, and they're, you know, some say there's nowhere I can go to get help, and people say, well, your father's a monster anyway. But, you know, it's not about what, you know, that issue. The point from the perspective of looking at the impact on families of the executed, it's what is it like to have your loved one's life taken in that particular way? So the point is the practice affects a lot of people in a lot of ways.
And are we coming into this, and I noted this in the book, but I mean, it seems like we're also all over the place as far as whether the person's really guilty or not, or whether we know that beyond a shadow of a doubt.
We don't always know that. I tell you, though, the attorneys I interviewed were not attorneys who specialized in, you know, wrongful conviction, overturning wrongful conviction, drawing attention to innocence. They worked as hard as they did for clients who were clearly guilty. They felt just as strongly about it. You know, so issue of innocence is very important and gets a lot of attention, but it's also important to look at the impact even when a client is guilty.
The name of the book, which is fascinating, is Fighting for Their Lives Inside the Experience of Capital Defense Attorneys. It is Susanna Scheffer is the author. She is project director at Murder Victims Families for Human Rights and will be speaking tonight at SUNY Albany's School for Criminal Justice. You can find out more about that event by going to albany.edu/SCJ. albany.edu/SCJ. The event takes place at 5:30 at the Husted Hall Amphitheater. Susanna Scheffer, a great pleasure. I thank you very much for being with us. Best of luck in your work.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.